Welcome to the Animal Voices radio show here on 102.7 FM Co-op Radio CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, November 25th, 2011. I am your host, Allison Cole, and I am joined here today by my co-hosts, Tara Gardner and Alyssa Ray. Hello.
Hi.
Mics on, please. Our guest co-host, Caleb Wieldon, who will be featured on the show later on, and our control room tech trainee, Morgan Ahoff. Animal Voices is Vancouver's only animal advocacy and vegan-related program, bringing you all the animal and vegan-related news, events, interviews, lifestyle, and commentary you need to keep up to date on what's happening both locally and internationally. We at Animal Voices encourage the movement toward a world in which animals are treated with compassion and mercy and are afforded the same rights that humans take for granted. This program can be heard every Friday from noon till 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and is also streamed live at cooperadio.org and available as podcasts on iTunes and animalvoices.org after airing. On today's show, our first segment will be a new regular segment we are calling Activist Spotlight, and we'll profile activists for the animals. Caleb Wieldon, who is here live in the studio and comes to us from Seattle, Washington, and has been an outspoken advocate for animals for 11 years. He's worked for People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, interned at Farm Sanctuary, and is currently the Northwest Outreach Coordinator for Vegan Outreach, a nonprofit organization dedicated to reducing the suffering of farmed animals by promoting informed, ethical eating. Today, he will be sharing with us personal stories and insights from his dedicated life to animal activism. I look forward to speaking with you later in the show, Caleb. For our feature interview today, we have Ellen Jaffe Jones on the show, who is the author of the new vegan cookbook, Eating Vegan on $4 a Day. Ellen is an award-winning reporter and journalist, as well as a financial consultant dedicated to socially responsible investing. So who better to write a book on eating vegan on a budget? Ellen is a wealth of knowledge on living a healthy lifestyle. Not only is Ellen a trained cooking instructor for the Cancer Project with the PCRM, she is also a personal trainer and running coach. Today she will be talking to us about why and how it is easy to eat vegan on only $4 a day or less. So Tara, you've read Ellen's book this week, as have I, and you would like to talk to us about it.
Yes. So I've made a couple, just one of her recipes actually, which was the chocolate mousse, and I made it for my friends last night who are not vegan or vegetarian, and they loved it. And when I told them what the ingredients were, they were completely surprised.
Tofu.
They were shocked. They were like, I can't believe that's tofu. How did you make it taste so good? So it's really easy, simple recipe and really quick to make. And it tastes amazing.
Yeah, thanks for bringing some in today, Tara. It was so tasty.
I'm glad you liked it. Yeah, I'm glad you liked it. I really liked how really like mousse it was. I when I poured it in the cups, I thought
how mousy it was.
Yeah, how mousy it was.
Not the animal mousse.
When I poured it in the cups, I was like, oh, it's gonna be more like pudding. But then it was very fluffy and nice. So, yeah, I enjoyed making that and trying out one of her recipes. So another thing that I wanted to talk about was $4 a day. So we're saving money. What are your experiences with trying to save money while eating vegan?
You know what I've been doing a lot lately, and I know Ellen advocates and a lot of people advocate eating organic. It is more expensive. What I've actually been doing lately is shopping at a store in Vancouver, Sunrise Market, which is amazing for deals. It's basically all the grocers, the major retailers, they send all their food there that's it's still good, but it's I guess it's not good enough for them to sell in their store, and they sell it for dirt cheap. And I buy a lot of stuff there, a lot of greens, a lot of fruit, and I've been juicing a lot lately, so that takes in my green smoothies, and that it takes up a lot of greens and produce. They have amazing deals. I buy shirataki noodles there for like $1 a package, and they're like $4 in the store. It's Sunrise who makes the tofu, so they have great tofu deals there. So
oh, really?
Buy all your tofu there. Yeah, they'll have like smoked tofu, like two for $1, like two packages.
Oh, no way.
Each of those packages are about $4 and something in the store. Mm-hmm. They have those Pete's tofu, chopped up tofu with sauces, and those are about, I think $2.49 or $2.99 in the store, and you can get them for 50 cents each. They're sometimes less.
Yeah.
And they always have excellent deals. They have a lot of, like, Lara bars are cheaper there. Organic walnuts, I was getting those there for a really good deal. My kale chips, when they had them, they were selling them for, like, $2.50, I think, a bag, and those are about $5 to $7
That's
a bag
a really
in Whole
good
Foods.
Price. Wow.
You buy that, kale chips?
I don't have a dehydrator.
But you just put them in the oven.
Yeah,
they're
not so easy. They're not as good in the oven. But, but thanks, Alyssa. Yeah, I do make them. They're a lot nicer when you buy them all nicely dehydrated.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah,
so,
that's true. Well, one of the points that I wanted to point out was tofu here seems more expensive to me. She suggests buying in bulk at the big box stores, which is what I do. I like to go to Costco and buy a lot of my stuff in bulk. So that's where I buy my tofu.
And tofu.
Oh, yeah. Frozen blueberries, frozen strawberries.
I bought agave nectar at Costco last week. You get two for $8.
Yeah. Very so cheap. That's one thing that I wanted to point out is the prices vary a little depending on where you are. So tofu for me costs about $2, which is more expensive than her recipe.
Don't shop at Whole Foods unless you have to.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And if you do shop at Whole Foods, shop on sales.
Yeah.
Look for coupons.
So, and that's another thing that she points out is keeping track of where the prices, how much the prices are at different places so that you know what the cheapest price is where. What else did I want to point out?
You know what I actually do is I go to the States sometimes. I'm going this weekend for shopping, Bellingham, and their prices are usually cheaper than in Canada. So, yeah, if you can afford to, make a little trip over the border. But I take photographs of their it's easier than writing down the prices. Mm-hmm. So if I think something's cheaper, I just take a picture of it just to compare. If it's significantly cheaper, I know I should wait till I get to the States to buy it.
I love taking pictures of tons of stuff, and then I tweet it or
Facebook it. I have lots
of
money-saving tips. I wouldn't tweet a picture of, I don't know, like organic walnuts.
If it's a really good price, I'll tweet it.
Actually, that's a great tip, so then other people will know.
Yeah, exactly. I tweeted a picture of the coconut yogurt the other night when I saw that we have that in...
Where did you even buy it from?
Donald's Market.
Okay, good to know.
Donald's Market on Nanaimo.
Good to know.
Yeah.
I had to scour Vancouver just to find plain soy yogurt for that dip that I made you guys. So,
okay.
Yeah, it's not really easy to find in Canada.
Nice. Okay, well, that's my quick little review of Eat Vegan on $4 a Day.
And we'll have the author with us later on in the show to speak more about it.
Yes.
Money, 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 money. Nothing but money.
It's because the system serves the interest of the wealthy. It is their system.
Stark Raven, Mondays at 7 p.m.
Radical Radio on the People's Station.
CFRO 102.7 FM.
You better not put my son in jail. I'll take this country down.
I have this week's upcoming Animal Voices events. Today, Friday, November 25th, it is World Fur Free Friday, and there's two demonstrations happening in Vancouver. One's happening right now, so if you're listening to this and you're anywhere near downtown, it's happening at the corner of Georgia and Granville Streets in downtown Vancouver at 12 noon, which is right now. So there is currently happening a quiet and very respectful demo. That means no yelling, no swearing, no being aggressive to people passing by, as they say, in Vancouver for more than the 70 million animals killed every year for their fur. The gathering is happening now at the corner of Georgia and Gravel Streets in downtown Vancouver. Placards and educational material are being provided for this demo by CATCA, which is Campaigns Against the Cruelty to Animals. There's another fur demonstration happening at 3 p.m. today, and I had announced this last week. It was originally scheduled for 12 p.m. They've moved it to 3 now. This is at the Vancouver Art Gallery downtown. This is a rally and march in solidarity with our non-human brothers and sisters who are being continually tortured and murdered for the greed of humans, and that is to make fur. This is being put on by Food Not Bombs Vancouver and the Felinarchy Collective. And what they will be doing at 3 o'clock is marching through the shopping district of downtown Vancouver to the stores that sell first. So if you want to come out and show your support and march with them, just show up at the Vancouver Art Gallery at 3 o'clock p.m. On Sunday, November the 27th, that's this Sunday, there is a raw vegan potluck hosted by Eternal Abundance and Rooted Cafe at 1025 Commercial Drive in Vancouver. Have either of you been to that?
Definitely.
I've been to Rooted Cafe. I really love their food.
To their monthly potlucks.
I have not been to them.
Okay, just curious. I want to go one day, but I haven't been able to make it yet. So they have these every month. If you're curious or new to the raw food lifestyle, you can come and experience a wonderful assortment of delicious raw vegan foods at this popular monthly raw food potluck. Every month sees new faces along with new stories about people's interest in and journey with raw food. Everyone is welcome to attend, so bring your family and friends or just come on your own. And it says in their ad, everyone is nice. That's important. please bring a prepared vegan raw food dish to generously serve 6 or more adults, preferably organic, an ingredients list, your own serving utensils, plate and cutlery. And they have some, but numbers are limited. And the cost to get in is $3 to $5 on a sliding scale to cover the space usage and cleaning. There is a Facebook event made for this under the Eternal Abundance's Facebook page, so you can reply on that if you want. On Sunday, December the 4th, at 11:30 a.m., volunteers are needed for leafleting at the annual Santa Claus Parade in downtown Vancouver. And this leafleting event is hosted by Liberation BC. So volunteers on behalf of the local nonprofit organization Liberation BC are going to be handing out their talking turkey leaflets and spreading the message of holiday compassion for all during this very, very busy event in downtown Vancouver, which I know attracts a couple hundred thousand people to watch this parade, which I usually play in every year, but not this year. If you would like to partake in this leafleting venture, meet at 11:30 a.m. at the City Centre Canada SkyTrain station, which is located at Granville and Georgia Street. And for more information, or if you want to volunteer, you can contact Roger at roger@liberationbc.org. And listen, Tara, you were handing out these leaflets for Thanksgiving, right?
Yeah.
Remember we chatted about that a little bit. So are you planning to do it for Christmas? Or I'm just putting you on the spot here.
Oh my goodness. I would love to do that.
Yeah.
But contact Roger.
I work on Sunday, but otherwise I would be there.
Yeah, I'll have to check my schedule. Hopefully it'll work out.
Or if anyone else wants to do it. So their talking turkey leaflets are really nicely done. And I've actually handed out these leaflets before too for Liberation BC. So
awesome.
Excellent volunteer opportunity. If you have an animal-friendly event that you would like to have announced on the show, please email us the details at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com, or you can post it on our Facebook page, which is Animal Voices Vancouver.
You're listening to the Animal Voices Radio Show here on 102.7 FM, CFRO, Vancouver Cooperative Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. And this is an activist spotlight. So I had the pleasure of meeting our next guest at the Veg Fest in Portland this past September. I had been meaning to pick up a stack of leaflets and do more outreach work and was excited to see that Vegan Outreach had a booth at the annual conference. Caleb Wielden is currently the Northwest Outreach Coordinator for Vegan Outreach. Since the conference, I've learned that Caleb has been an outspoken advocate for animals for 11 years and has worked with a number of other animal action and education groups across the U.S., including People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals and Farm Sanctuary. It's always inspiring to meet other impassioned voices for the animals, so thank you for joining us today on Animal Voices, Caleb.
Thanks, Caleb, for coming in.
We're excited to hear about what activism means to you and about the projects you've been involved in over the years. So first of all, You're visiting our fine city from Seattle. Can you tell us about your current project and what brings you up north?
Sure. Well, first, thank you guys all so much for doing this incredible show. I love it to death.
Have you heard of it before today?
I actually had because Alyssa and I had talked about it.
That's great.
And there's a really awesome vegan radio show out of Bend, Oregon, and those guys were talking about how they loved your show and listened to it as well.
Awesome.
So I thought that was really cool. And I also just wanted to say thank you for you guys for doing this activism. Activism takes so many different forms, and this one is so unique and special, and I just feel like You have these great voices. You're also good at this. Always is so cool too. And it seems like you really use it, and you are so positive and upbeat, and that's a really important thing. And I think, like you said about the fur-free Friday demonstration, if you're not positive, you're going to get more flies with agave nectar. But don't go flies.
Good point. Can you tell us what brings you up here about your work with vegan outreach and leafleting and whatnot?
Sure. So I think the first thing that's important to point out about vegan outreach is that our number one goal is to engage people and present them the argument that they can reduce their end of suffering when it comes to animals simply by reducing the number of animals and animal products that they eat. And we focus very heavily on communicating to people that this isn't an all or nothing thing, that nobody is perfect and that all of us are in a different place. And the more upbeat and positive and encouraging we can be with people, even the people that aren't making the best choices, the better we can be. So vegan outreach's primary goal tool for reaching out to people is, as Alyssa said, leafleting. It's a lot of fun. You get to be on your feet and engaging with people, and I like it because people are so positive, especially here in the Northwest, all over the region, but especially here in Vancouver, people are so nice and positive even when they don't want to leaflet.
You mean as opposed to Texas, or I don't know where else you've
actually
been?
I find people in the South to be very polite as well. It's a lot of the Northeast and some of the Midwest.
So New York people.
New York for sure.
Meanies.
Everybody's a little more honest there. I sometimes wonder if it's positive
or
negative.
I appreciate honesty more than just, sure, I'll take your pamphlet and then throw it in the garbage.
Right, on the way by, yes. Yeah. I'm learning to appreciate the people that don't take them.
Yeah.
Of course, they balance that.
They don't want to waste paper.
Yeah. But the bottom line for us is that the more people that look at this information, the better it is for animals, because we feel that the arguments themselves are strong enough, and that people seeing what happens to animals on factory farms, they're going to get the picture, and they're hopefully going to make some change. And any change is a positive one, is the way we look at it.
Nice. And you're mostly you do outreach work at colleges, is that right? You have there's an Adopt a College program. Can you tell us about that?
Right. Yeah. Adoptacollege.org is our really fun website. I often encourage people to join the party because it is a party. One huge leaflet, brochure, upbeat, positive party. So the program is, you go online, you can sign up, and you sort of pick a college or two in your city, show up there and give out information. And we have a number of really awesome brochures, some of them really hard-hitting, some of them more information-based, in diet and nutrition and that kind of thing. Our bottom line is the more young people that we can reach with the message, the better it is, because, if you're 18 or 19 years old, you have another 50 years of eating animals ahead of you unless somebody can get to you.
And perhaps your opinions on the matter aren't as well-formed as maybe if you're an adult.
Sure. And I think young people, by and large, interestingly enough, are far more informed about animal issues than people certainly that are my mom's age. And they just seem to care a whole lot more. And I think part of that is not having their soul be hardened.
They're
by
open-minded.
Years and years of being,
they haven't become jaded yet.
Right. Yeah.
And they are open to new ideas, especially those at colleges and universities, because that's what they're there for, to learn new ideas.
Yes. I hope so anyway. Even today I met Alyssa and I tabled this morning and gave out a few hundred leaflets, and I met a university professor at Simon Fraser who was vegan, a grad student, and a number of other kids that were veg and vegan that were really excited that we were there, and we even got a $5 donation, which frankly doesn't happen very often for me, I'll tell you that much.
We weren't there for very long. So now, working with Vegan Outreach is a relatively new venture for you. Before I get into your history, more about your history of activism, I wonder if you mind sharing with us your personal transition story. I'm guessing you weren't born a vegan, an animal rights activist. How did you shift into greater awareness of animal suffering?
I wasn't born vegan. I wasn't even close. In fact, to this day, I still sort of regard myself as kind of I'm a meat eater. I just happen to be vegan. And I like to think that I break stereotypes for people because, I love sports.
You look like a meat eater to me.
I often get mistaken for security at colleges rather than a leafleter. Anyway, for me, the bottom line came, my brothers and I fancied ourselves very progressive activists, and we took a 25-hour car ride in 2000, a 25-hour car ride from Nova Scotia, where we lived, to Washington, D.C., to participate in a demonstration against the World Bank and the IMF, who at the time were doing some really hideous things in the global south and really punishing poor people for being poor. And so we had gone down the protest that, and I remember being, I had Quikrete, you know, you used, back in the day when you used to be able to do activism in the U.S. without your, you know, fear of being arrested and put in jail for 5 years for no reason, we used to do civil disobedience where we would use PVC piping and Quikrete, and we would basically concrete ourselves together to block an intersection off. And so in this case, I was, you know, a number of people were sort of locking down this one intersection, and I saw some really, really brutal, I just saw some really horrible acts of bullying, and they were all cops, and they were just taking in. You guys saw the pictures from UC Davis at the Occupy UC Davis protest, where the guys just going by and sort of nonchalantly spraying pepper spray. Well, these cops were doing that, except for they were canisters of tear gas and their motorcycles. And I watched a cop drive over another activist, and I thought, I never want to be like that. I never want to be the cop on the bike. And then that night I went home, and my friend, another guy at the protest, challenged me, and then my friend challenged me again to ask myself who I was bullying. And that night I watched an undercover investigation called Meet Your Meat, and I went vegan. And I've been vegan since then.
Wow, I really appreciate that you draw the connection between other social justice struggles and animal rights. I think that's really important to learn that all oppression is connected, and that you have to look inside. Mm-hmm. And if you don't, you know, if you're the 99% or whatever, well, who are you oppressing? Like, we have to look inside. Thank you.
Oh, I totally agree. And I love that you bring up that point, and I feel like every time somebody thinks about what they could do better, it's positive. And doesn't mean you have to be a psycho and obsess about, you know, every little thing that you do. Nobody's perfect, but still, you know, chickens, you know.
Do something. Yeah, what I say is do something, do anything.
Definitely. I wonder if you can tell us a bit about your work with PETA, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
Sure. Well, I think PETA has a very strong reputation around the world, I think, for being very outspoken.
They were on national news last night.
Oh, good.
Because they want to call a city tofu.
Perfect.
Change the name from turkey to tofu, but go ahead.
Yeah, yeah. And they've had some success, I think, getting some press on a lot of those town name changes. My favorite one was getting the Hamburg, New York, asking them to change it to Veggieburg, New York. I was like, really? That's a stretch.
PR move.
It's very fun. My work with PETA was very focused on very unflashy, very behind-the-scenes work. I worked with a fantastic team on the youth in the youth division, which we call PETA 2, and we developed basically a system of outreach that takes young people from face-to-face contact with one of our representatives, and hopefully ends with them making some positive change for animals. And that, so we'll meet them at a concert or an event, and then we'll, you know, collect their email address and then follow up over email. And we sort of worked over a period of about 6 years, a system where we could reach around 250,000 young people under the age of 22, 23 every year, and be able to follow up with them and start a conversation that again would end with them making some positive change for animals. So that was a lot of fun. I've also worked on a lot of great other stuff for PETA. I was the primary coordinator for the Gay Pride events for PETA last year in the States. And marched in my first Gay Pride parade in San Francisco, which was the coolest thing I've ever done for animals. I think it was a little for me too. I'm not going to lie; like, we had a great time.
Awesome.
So I've had a lot of varied experiences, and the only thing that I think that has really drawn them all together is that the most important thing for me to remember about activism is that the more upbeat and positive and pro solution you are, the more effective you are as an activist. And if you think about what people want to hear as opposed to what they need to hear, and find a good balance between the two, I think you're going to do a great job.
Yeah, you were saying before to me that that your personal outlook and approach has changed a lot over the years. Can you talk about when you first kind of went vegan and versus how you reach out nowadays?
Sure, yeah, and we were talking about where my mom is as far as her diet and lifestyle go, and just on the car ride here after working at Simon Fraser, which, by the way, Alyssa is a fantastic leaf litter and is amazing at outreach, and anybody that gets a chance to work with her would see that.
Thank you.
No, you're welcome. You're amazing. So my mom is very, very, very close to vegan, and
that's great.
Yeah, and
it's more than some animal activists can say.
Sure, and she's worked very hard to get to where she is, and I was telling Alyssa that when I first went vegan, I went completely nuts, and I made my veganism all about me and how guilty I felt about all of these horrible choices that I'd made throughout my life, and I sort of projected all of my anger and sadness and all of the things that we see when we look at cruelty to animals. I just projected that on everyone else in my family and decided that I was going to hold them responsible for the same choices that I had basically been making up until like 3 weeks before that.
Yeah.
Which, of course, is a hideous way to approach people about animal stuff, especially veganism. And so I've walked it back significantly, and I've been really trying to focus on finding a way to communicate with people that's going to be both meet their needs.
And you got to practice on your family, which is good.
Well, I screwed up so much with them that now I feel like, I feel like an idiot saying that I'm an expert, but I've learned so much from the mistakes that I've made talking to people and how you can get a positive reaction versus negative. And it did start with my family, and I'm so grateful for them that they'll even keep talking to me. I can't even believe it sometimes, the things that I've said to those poor people.
Yeah.
But, my younger brother doesn't eat chickens anymore. My older brother was vegetarian before I was. And
wow.
So all of them have sort of made some changes here and there, sometimes going to products that aren't tested on animals to drinking soy milk or almond milk or whatever people are into.
Yeah, I would definitely agree that looking... just that the positive approach is way more effective, and just kind of that, like, the biggest challenge is communication and social interactions and just being around your family and friends. Mm-hmm. Now with this awareness, I wanted to talk a bit just about activism in general. How do you sort of keep your fire stoked? You've been at this for a long time, and I wonder sort of what gives you hope, and how do you keep doing the work that you do?
Well, I'm not going to lie. It is, for me, completely based on the other activists and people that I meet, and I get, when I used to travel a lot, and I would go back to the office at PETA, one of the women that I worked with really closely would be like, every time you come back from the road, every time you've worked with people and done outreach, you always come back more energized and more pumped up than I've seen you in months. And I thought a lot about that, and it seems to me that I get inspired by seeing other people taking action for animals. And it's funny, somebody could tell me they're going to go vegan as a result of talking to me, and of course I'm like, I love that, and I'm blown away by it. But it's when that person takes a step towards making, turning their life into a tool to help more animals and starting to like do outreach on their own. That's what really gets me going. And I'm proud to say that, there are not a few dozen people at PETA that I hired that still do activism, and volunteers and interns I've worked with over the years that I still do work with them. Many of them are some of my closest friends as well. So it's, it's the people that do this work that inspire me. And, it was American Thanksgiving yesterday, and I told all of my American friends how thankful I was for their amazing work for animals. And that's the biggest one for me, honestly.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for sharing, Caleb. And thank you for being a voice for animal suffering and for joining us on the show today to share your stories and wisdom.
I have to say, you've been an inspiration to keep me going, too, just chatting with you. It's great. So thanks.
Thank you, guys. Really nice to be here.
You're listening to Animal Voices Radio Show on Cooperative Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. That's 102.7 FM. And now I have some news items for you. First of all, McDonald's and Target dropped one of their major egg suppliers after video footage was revealed, which depicts animal cruelty and unsanitary conditions. Last Friday, ABC aired an investigative report on Sparbo Farms, one of the largest egg suppliers in the U.S.
featuring undercover footage by a nonprofit animal welfare group, Mercy for Animals. The footage from five different Sparbo farms depicts hens crammed in cramped cages, some crushed to death, male chicks being stuffed into plastic bags where they're left to suffocate, and chicks' beaks being burned off without anesthetic. The undercover activist said he saw workers do horrendous things to birds. They were thrown, grabbed by the neck, and slammed in and out of cages. The FDA, which has a new national anti-salmonella protocol after last year there was an outbreak, cited Sparbo for at least 13 health violations. Just before the show aired, after the FDA cited Sparbo or gave them a warning, I guess, McDonald's actually announced they were no longer going to be purchasing from them. That's pretty huge. Not long after the show aired, Target followed suit. They sell food in the States. McDonald's spokesperson said the behavior in the video was disturbing and completely unacceptable. And Sparbo announced they have a zero tolerance policy and that the employees in the video have been fired. I wonder what they have a zero tolerance policy for.
So it didn't sorry, really say. I missed the first part. Who is it that has a zero tolerance policy?
Sparbo Farms that got in trouble. They said that, like, what is
zero tolerance policy for getting caught? Probably
exactly. that's my guess. What I think. And like, or for a zero tolerance policy for undercover activists. Probably that's what they, I don't know.
Yeah, they didn't specify, huh?
Yeah. Anyway, pretty big news. I haven't actually watched the footage or the 2020 program. But I will soon, and I'm just really glad that that word is getting out there. But of course, these sort of things, like male chicks being killed because they're useless to the egg industry,
which is standard.
Yep, chicks' beaks being burned off without anesthetic, that happens pretty much everywhere, and hens cramped in cages. That's all battery cage hens are cramped. So they're not, this isn't just one farm. This is, one farm that got investigated, but this really applies across the board.
We've done feature interviews on this issue before on the show. I encourage people to look those up on our website, animalvoices.org, if you want to find out more.
Yeah, definitely. And just this week in local news, a tragedy at the Vancouver Zoo. Two giraffes died there last week. Mm-hmm. First, it was Tuesday, November 15th. A three-year-old baby giraffe was found dead in her enclosure, cause unknown thus far. And 4 days later, his mother was found dead as well. This is pretty heartbreaking. It sounds to me like the mother died of heartbreak. That's my guess.
And for the baby giraffe, I think they said the cause wasn't known. Is that correct?
Yeah. They're still investigating it. But of course,
I also heard that the mother was pregnant. So it's actually three of them that we lost.
Awful. Yep. It's pretty sad, but honestly not surprising. Zoos are not sanctuaries. Our winters are not suitable to animals from Africa.
Absolutely
and
not.
And our own Vancouver Zoo has a pretty sordid past, usually relating many issues and incidents relating to the hippo enclosures, particularly being completely unacceptable.
Right. If anything good can come out of this story, it's that now that it's in the media, it's drawing attention to the animal cruelty involved with the Vancouver Zoo. And actually, I read a news story, I think, from a major newspaper, perhaps the Vancouver Sun, when this happened last week, highlighting how the zoo was actually charged with animal cruelty with regards to Hazina, the hippo.
Yep, in 2006, mm-hmm. animal cruelty charges. Also in 2004, they lost their accreditation from the Canadian Association of Zoos and Aquariums.
And they're still allowed to run, or did they have
they
to get that
They got their accreditation
fixed.
2 years later without fixing anything.
Oh.
And 2009, five zebras were killed when two buffalo were let loose in the zebra enclosure. Five zebras died of stress shock, like strokes. Anyway, I just have one more short, I don't really have terribly much time, but there was dozens of beagles that were rescued from an animal testing lab that was going out of business in Spain, and 40 beagles arrived at the LA airport last Wednesday, and they were set to be euthanized until animal attorney Shannon Keith stepped in.
We've had her on the show before.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, I would love to hear that. She, I learned that she specializes in representing nonprofit animal rescue firms concentrating on undercover factory farm work and the mistreatment of circus animals. And yeah, I guess there's a bunch of them have been adopted out to caring homes, and I think they still need some homes. And yeah, if people are curious why beagles are used for animal testing, it's because they're docile and cheap to feed. Mm-hmm. And it's really, really popular that they're used for that, and it's very sad. That's all I have for news today.
Tara, you're on.
All right. So joining us today is Ellen Jaffe Jones, author of the new cookbook, Eating Vegan on $4 a Day. Ellen is an award-winning reporter and journalist, as well as a financial consultant dedicated to socially responsible investing. So who better to write a book on eating vegan on a budget? Ellen is a wealth of knowledge on living a healthy lifestyle. Not only is Ellen a trained cooking instructor for the Cancer Project, she is also a personal trainer and running coach. Thanks for joining us today, Ellen, and welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks. So tell us, Ellen, what has fueled your passion for living and teaching a healthy lifestyle?
Well, personally, my mom, aunt, and both sisters had breast cancer, and I am literally the only adult female in my family who has not had it. And my aunt died of it in our home when I was 5 years old, so I've been very focused on how do I avoid this. Our family used to congregate in hospitals and would joke about whatever disease was going on at that particular time in our family was what was paying for the hospital wing. Or we would joke that this was the scene of our current year's hospital family reunion. So over the years, you know, I tried to keep a light sense of humor about some of this stuff, but I really began focusing as I became a television investigative reporter. And I did that in the past for 18 years. I won 2 Emmys in the National Press Club in the U.S. And I was just so focused on interviewing people who had different things to say, both in the medical community and as registered dietitians. You know, what is the magic bullet here? What is the answer? What is the truth? You know, that whole thing about fairness and being honest and truthful. And one of the cool things, as I became a financial consultant at Smith Barney for 5 years after I left television, I began learning a whole lot about how to do financial planning, not only for myself but my clients. And I was the number one market performer, which had everything to do with how well I did for my clients but not for myself. The only thing I got for that honor was not one of those Wall Street bonuses that you hear about. I got an email that went out to everybody else in the office talking about where we were ranked with these positions. And the reality is, if you don't bring in a lot of assets for the company, then you may not necessarily be rewarded financially, personally, for that. So I did learn about socially responsible investing, which was a huge part of what I did. And then I began doing media consulting with some of the leaders in this country, in the U.S., Neil Barnard and his staff. And that's really how I started meeting a lot of the vegetarian and vegan leaders. And both Dr. Barnard, who wrote The Forward, and T. Colin Campbell, who wrote The China Study, endorsed my book on the back cover. My whole thing was, I saw these stories on the news that said you can't eat well on a budget. And it just drove me nuts, because I've been eating this way more or less, off and on, the last 30 years of my life. And I've saved myself from a hysterectomy. I saved myself. I almost died of a colon blockage at the age of 28, went to the emergency room, and they said they'd never seen a blockage that large, and I would need to be on medicine the rest of my life. At that point, I ran to the health food store, read all 5 books on fiber, and there actually was a little bit of research at the time that said, you know, if you increase fiber in your diet, you're going to see great things happen. And after that, it was just fascinating how I never needed to be on medicine, and I have been so healthy. I do 5K running races. I place in my age group. I just turned 59. I did my first marathon last year, all on plants.
That's fantastic. And so with your wealth of knowledge and learning everything that you have, how has it affected your family life? We were talking earlier about how what our influence is on our family and them eating a more healthy diet. So what has your experience been with that?
You know, it's fascinating you ask that because I was on...
You're in a mixed marriage, right?
I am, and I was interviewed in Tampa, where in the area where I live, just a couple of days ago, by a similar in a similar program format, and the host was just really focusing on how come your children aren't vegan, how come your relatives aren't vegan. And it's like, you know what, you can. That's the whole expression. You
we're
can
vegan,
lead
we're not
the water.
Magicians.
Exactly, but you can't make them drink. And you know, it's interesting. I've heard Dr. Neil Barnard, who has just written a number of books and is my role model in life. I mean, he's a fabulous doctor who has been really behind the scenes in a very quiet way for decades. And it's like the national media has just discovered how eloquent and right on target he is. And he and some other doctors have been very helpful in getting Bill Clinton to go vegan. And, you know, he talks about how he comes from a family of three boys, where he's the youngest, and I come from a family of three girls. And it's interesting, if you talk to some of these more, how do I put this, vocal activists, many of us did come from being the youngest in our families, where we've had the opportunity to see what didn't work. And so, you know, when my sister got cancer, I did grocery shopping at the health food store. I brought beans and brown rice to her doorstep, and she said, thanks, but no thanks. And as I've become a cooking instructor for the Cancer Project, that has really helped me to understand that you can't always assume that because people see what you're doing and see what works for you, that they're going to say, yeah, I think that's something I want to try. So just trying to tolerate and understand where people are at their level of understanding, and ultimately you just have to provide the information, be a good role model, and hope something sticks to the wall.
That's awesome, and definitely something everybody should keep in mind when they're talking to their family about eating healthy. So what would you say is it that inspired you to write Eat Vegan on $4 a Day? Was it more the budget, or was it more trying to get people to eat more healthy or saving lives? What was it for you?
All of the above. But really the thing that I think triggered it was when I worked at Smith Barney, I found that corporations, quite frankly, I know this is going to come as a big shock, don't really care about the environment unless you show them that by recycling their own company's cans, as well as other companies' cans, that's going to save the money. Mm. And when that light bulb goes off, all of a sudden they are all over the place about being socially responsible. And this whole idea that if you show people they can save money by trading out, for example, a meal of hamburger meat, the cheapest form of hamburger meat, 30% fat, is six times more expensive than a comparable serving of beans. Mm. And when I started crunching the numbers like that, I thought, wow, if you could show people they could save that much money over the course of not only one meal, but say they trade out three meals a week, over the course of a week, a year, a lifetime, we're talking significant savings. And that's just for one person.
Yeah, that's definitely one of the things that I've encountered when I'm, you know, talking to people about eating vegan, is definitely the price. Thinking it's really expensive to be vegan in Vancouver or, you know, anywhere in the world. So that's a really great point. And another good point, I think, is that you look at a lot of different countries that do eat vegan or vegetarian,
yeah.
And they're all really...
Third world countries, too.
Exactly.
Don't have a lot of money.
Yes, yes. And they eat vegan, vegetarian meals for very, very cheap. You go to
India. Because animal foods are expensive.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
You know, my mantra is beans, grains, and greens, if you have to summarize it into a five-second television soundbite. Mm. And I talk about in the book how there were actually studies done before, during, and after World War II that showed in the U.S., especially, that heart disease was way down before and during World War II when we didn't have access to meat and dairy like we did after World War II. And it certainly, as T. Colin Campbell has written in the China study, in the cultures of the world where they don't have access to meat and dairy, there are no diseases of affluence, cancer, diabetes, heart disease, Alzheimer's. These are all diseases of arteries and inflammation. Mm-hmm. Even arthritis. You know, as a runner, people say, oh, you know, your knees are going to fall apart. And I'm saying, I don't think so. I've been to the doctor, and, you know, the bone doctors say the bones are great, and the cardiologist says I have the heart of a 21-year-old. I mean, you know, where else are we going to start looking for the fountain of youth? And it's really just on our plates three times a day. It's so simple. But, you know, my whole focus really in the book is about how much you can save, not only at the store, but also by avoiding the cost of diseases. In the U.S., and there are plenty of websites where you can verify this, heart disease and a bypass surgery costs about $100,000 to $200,000, depending on your circumstances. And if you factor that into that hamburger that you're buying at a restaurant for $5, at Smith Barney we used to call this dollar cost averaging. So if you factor that bypass surgery into the hamburger, it's really more like a $1,000 hamburger, depending how many burgers you eat over your lifetime. And that's what I'm hoping people will do, is just start thinking about how much money they really can save by not getting sick.
Speaking of the true cost of a hamburger, can you talk to us a bit about government food subsidies, which are prevalent in both the U.S. and Canada, but I think a lot of people don't know about them?
Well, one of the, there are different kinds of subsidies, and the area that I am most familiar with is through the United States Department of Agriculture and the Checkoff program. This particular program is all about advertising. So if you go into a cafeteria at a school, you'll see the, you know, got milk posters, you'll see beef, it's what's for dinner. This is part of the Checkoff program, or has been in the past, and if you look at how much money is being allocated to these different sectors, for example, in my book I talk about dairy products. There was $281 million for the last time that I checked these figures. Fluid milk is under that at $107 million, beef $79 million, and way down at the bottom of the list is watermelons at $1.6 million.
I was surprised they even had a budget.
Yeah, well,
I don't see many watermelon commercials on TV.
No, you don't, nor broccoli, nor any of that. And the funny thing is, actually, I was hired by the National Watermelon Promotion Board to do media training for them for several years, which is just hilarious.
Oh my
but
gosh.
Really, what they were, the only thing they could spend money on, and this is what I was trained to help them with, is if the watermelons got contaminated, which, by the way, they did in China within the last year or two. So it was more crisis management, but they certainly didn't have enough money to be making watermelon posters and putting them in every school cafeteria. So, you know, that's the kind of stuff. I say when I go to doctors, which is rarely, but, you know, occasionally I do have, one thing a vegan diet doesn't cure is flat feet, and as a runner I have to deal with that. But, you know, I'll say I'm the broccoli rep. And I even go to a doctor who makes all of his drug reps do their dog and pony show in the lobby or in the waiting room where his the patients are, so, you know, he can see what he has to, you know, the patients can see what he has to put up with. And it's really sad in some ways that our priorities are so skewed. Mm-hmm. And of course there is the food stamp program in the U.S., which has they've changed the name now to SNAP, Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. Whatever you call it, it is hugely expensive. And if they went to substituting the meat with beans, they would save quite a bit of money doing that. There was even a lawsuit filed within the last week or two by a prison in the United States. The prisoners were alleging that because a prison had started substituting meat and replacing it with beans, the prisoners are saying, we're not getting enough nutrition. We want our beef back.
That's
and I'm
horrible.
Just really wondering who is behind that lawsuit, but I'm just not going to go there.
Oh, that's awful. They're probably, you know, they're definitely getting more health by eating beans rather than meat.
Absolutely.
So how long, there's so much information, so much amazing information in your book. How long did it take you to write this book?
Well, as I like to joke, since I was 5 years old, when my aunt died of breast cancer in our home, that actually made me very focused on how do I avoid the chaos. Because really, by the time I had children, and I had a long career in television, so I waited till I was pretty old to have kids, kind of just got in there under the wire, and my parents were so sick and diseased by the time I had kids, they couldn't pick up my kids, let alone babysit them. And it's entire generations who are losing when we are so destroyed by preventable diseases. Not to mention that preventable diseases they're just not sustainable, no matter if the government pays for insurance or you and I pay for it. But, you know, I think it's just I have a lot of information in the book. My goal was to put a price on every single recipe. My publisher upped it to the nearest quarter so we would have some wiggle room. The original title was Eat Well on $3 a day, so that tells you how long I've been working on it.
Because of inflation?
Exactly. And certainly I say, you know, my prices may not match yours exactly, but these are still the cheapest plant-based recipes on the planet. And I make a point of telling my audiences, I am not a gourmet chef, I'm not a gourmet cook, but these recipes are how I've lived my life the last 30 years. And to some extent, they're even more gourmet than I make on a daily basis, because for me, what lunch and dinner looks like is a combination of beans and grains, and a fresh salad as large as I can get. And because I'm saving so much money in my protein source, I can afford to go buy the vegetables. But, you know, if you're shopping at Walmart or big box stores, vegetables, when they're in season, are not that expensive. Last time I looked at broccoli, it was 11 cents an ounce. So even if you're eating 8 ounces of broccoli, that's two technical servings, it's only 88 cents. So it just doesn't have to be that complicated or expensive.
Ellen, as an athlete and personal trainer, what do you have to say as to how a vegan diet affects one's overall physical fitness?
You know, it's amazing. There are so many athletes now who are adopting a vegan diet to enhance their performance. I think there was some hockey star in Canada recently that I was reading about.
George Laroque.
Yeah, right. Sorry, I'm not so into Canadian hockey. I'm sorry.
Montreal,
but anyway, pardon?
He's from the Montreal Canadiens.
Yeah. So, you know, it's amazing what it does. I did my first marathon last year, as I mentioned, and other than my feet, I felt like I could still keep going. It was a bizarre sensation. And I continue to place in my age group for 5Ks. And what happens when you do that is they take pictures of the first, second, and third place winners. So I'll usually be standing next to the other winners in my age group. And if you look at the photos, and they're on my Facebook page, which is Eat Vegan on $4 a Day, as well as my website, vegcoach.com, you'll see that they're the ones who look like they're the 100-pound weaklings. And it makes you just say, well, maybe more meat-eating runners ought to be eating a vegan diet, because it really does. I'm the one with the muscle definition, the strong muscle biceps, and, you know, it's not, I don't spend a lot of time in the gym trying to build my muscles, because runners don't want to have muscle weighs more than fat, so there's this magical balance that you try and achieve where you are fit, but you don't bulk up too much, because that slows you down when you're trying to race.
Mm. Okay. So in your book, it talks about a lot about the health reasons for going vegan, and obviously how much money it can save you. But I've heard that you also have a lot of experience with witnessing animal cruelty. So how does it make you feel, I guess, to save so many lives, and what your thoughts are, animal welfare?
You know, I did see a lot of terrible stories and covered a lot of stories as a reporter, both with puppy mills in Missouri, which was my hometown in St. Louis, and Missouri is still one of the worst states for that, as well as when I worked in Miami, I covered and just got, you know, incredible feedback from the stories I did on the way animals were improperly disposed of at the city pound. And you know, I was able, even in those days, to get out there with a camera and record some of this stuff. Although my husband and I, he was an investigative reporter too, we both salivate at the kinds of equipment that is out there now, that the iPhones that can record so much, as the recent egg video that Brian Ross, one of our colleagues in Miami, recorded in the recent 2020 expose on what was happening to the chickens and the eggs at McDonald's. So, you know, those kinds of things greatly impact you over the course of years. And when my children were small, I would go to the protests at the circuses in town, because I had seen some very early undercover videos of the way elephants were treated at circuses, which, as you I'm sure well know, is just horrific. Mm-hmm. And so I was out there with the best of the protesters. But one of the reasons I wrote the book focusing on money is because my experience in 18 years in television news is that the only time animal rights activists got coverage, like PETA, was when they would do something outrageous, like take off their clothes or block traffic or do something disruptive.
Try to name a town tofu, as was in the news yesterday.
Yeah, that was whatever. I give them credit for trying and being out there on the front lines, because, lordy, somebody has to do it. And but as a reporter, I saw what got coverage and what didn't. And so I felt like if I approach this from how much you can save monetarily, because I really believe going forward, our country and many countries are in deep financial trouble. And as I somewhat jokingly say in my presentations that I give around the country, we all may be eating vegan whether we want to or not within 10 years, just because of people not being able to afford.
If people start to realize that it's cheaper than going to McDonald's, which that is often the argument, but I can't afford to eat vegan, I go to McDonald's instead.
Right. It doesn't make sense. Yeah. And my book is full of tips on how to prepare beans from scratch, which is the cheapest way to do it. Mm-hmm. But you can also get canned beans. It's only twice the expense of cooking from scratch. So it just doesn't have to be as stressful or rocket science. You can go buy a $10 crock pot at Walmart and, you know, go off in the morning while you go to work or do whatever you do and come back and your meal's done. So it can be very easy to eat this way. And mm-hmm. certainly it takes about 3 weeks to change your habits, whether it's your taste buds or your lifestyle habits. But once you learn how easy it is, I really think more and more people will want to do this because the food tastes better. That's really the number one reason, in my opinion.
Mm, okay. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Ellen. I really loved your book, and I'm definitely going to be sharing it with a lot of my friends and families, hoping to convert them to eating cheap on a vegan diet. And thanks so much for your time.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Ellen. You've been listening to the Animal Voices radio show on 102.7 FM Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Next week, we'll have two interviews for you. The first one will be with local animal advocate Maya Mayhem, who has been on the forefront of the vegan activism happening at the Occupy Vancouver event this past month. Maya will be speaking to us about how the Occupy movement ties into animal rights issues and about her vegan outreach efforts at Occupy Vancouver. And for our feature interview, we will have Twyla Francois on the show, who is a Central Region Director with the Canadian Horse Defense Coalition. She will be speaking with us about the recently introduced Bill C-322 in Canada, which hopes to put an end to horse slaughter in our country. We here at the Animal Voices show modestly ask you to keep connected with Animal Voices via the World Wide Web. You can do so by signing up for our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver, and join us on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR. And please do send us your suggestions and comments about the show either on Facebook or via email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. Also, please do check out the website, our website, www.animalvoices.org, where our shows can be downloaded from. So Caleb has chosen today's outgoing song, and he will introduce that for us. Please tune in again next week. Thanks for listening, and remember to be kind to the animals.
Thanks. This song is from a band called Propagandy, very strong vegan advocates. They're from Winnipeg, Manitoba. It's the largest pig slaughterhouse province in Canada, and this is a song called Potemkin City Limits about a wonderful pig named Francis who escapes from the slaughterhouse and almost gets away. The chasm.